9 November, Astronomy 101. Any questions?
I need a lab.
Say it again?
I need a lab.
I do too as well.
Oh, yeah, okay. Who else didn't get a lab? 2, 3, 4, okay. 5. Who else? Somebody here? That's it.
Okay.
You're welcome. You didn't get one? Telescope?
No, I didn't get
it. You were here last time?
No.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Yes.
On this question, Katrina says, if you have a set of eyepieces available, would that be the focal length of the eyepiece?
No. These
numbers?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So the first one was 47.
No, the first one was 57. The second one was 57.
Oh, okay.
I'm back.
All right. Ready? Lights. Okay, we're talking about, you're doing a lab on telescopes, you're putting together all that stuff that deals with reflection, refraction, and it's your last written lab. As I told you last time, the next thing that's coming up is your simulation activity, right? So, I will tell you about that probably next week, and give you a couple of weeks to work on that. Today we're going to continue with, we're going to look at the solar system. And we'll start off with a brief survey of the planets and some general facts about that. Wednesday, there's no class. Veterans Day, those of you that are in the military, thank you for your service to our country. Those of you that were in the military, the same goes for you. Any questions now? All right. Survey of the planets. Poor Pluto. Used to be a planet. You know, the thing is, and I'll start with that first. For a long time, we had a certain definition of what a planet was. And it was fine, because for a long time, we didn't know very much else other than what we call the planets in our solar system. And as we start learning more, the definitions start to change. And what happens in terms of these definitions, we try to make them so that they're more specific and define exactly what we mean when we talk about such objects. To say Pluto is a planet, not a planet, is really not important from one point of view. The fact is, it sort of does what the other planets that we consider planets to do. However, because of its size and its orbit, it's not quite like the other planets. And so for a long time, and I would always tell my students, you know, Pluto's not a planet anyway, don't worry about it. But it was there as a representative of something that we understood from a long time ago. When Pluto was discovered, it was discovered by accident. When Clyde Tombaugh was out trying to find this planet that was tugging on Neptune, you needed a certain mass object to do that. And when he discovered this moving object in his photographic plates that was in orbit around the sun, That was considered Planet X until they did the arithmetic on it and the math, and they found out it's not big enough to be tugging on Neptune. So it wasn't the one they were looking for. So he accidentally found Pluto. When we go back in time a little bit, 400 years ago, Galileo probably actually discovered Neptune 100 years or so before it was actually discovered, but he didn't know that there was another planet. But he found in his eyepiece, when he was looking at Jupiter, Neptune happened to be close enough to be in his eyepiece. And he did make mention of an unusual star that was more planet-like than starlight-like, and it just let it go at that. But it's recorded in his notes that he actually probably saw Neptune. So when people are looking for certain things, sometimes they find what they're looking for, sometimes they find something else. And so it goes in science and the discovery made of objects in the solar system.
What was actually pulling on you?
We don't know yet. I haven't found it. That's the thing. Something's still tugging on it, and so we still call it Planet X, and it might be that the Sun has a companion star, which we would call a brown dwarf, in orbit at some distance, and we're seeing the effects of that every so often as this thing gets a little closer than normal, gives a little tug and causes the change that we would see, yeah.
So if Pluto isn't a planet, then what is Pluto?
Pluto's a planet. It's just a sub. It's a subgroup of planets. I don't know how they classify. You got the two different things: dwarf planet or something. Now, but you go online, you can see. Well, you know, dwarf planet, giant planet. You know, more or less, it does what a planet does. And the definition of a planet also has to include that it clears its own path. In other words, as we're going to see when the solar system was formed, the material that's left over has to be out of the way of the planet. And so it clears its own path, meaning that maybe the materials that form the planet all end up in the planet, and there isn't any little stragglers around. So it becomes very difficult. And now why are we jumping on this all of a sudden? Because we're discovering planets around other stars. And now we need to classify things. And that's what we do best. We always like to pigeonhole stuff and have it in a nice, neat compartment so we can talk about it. So having said all that, let's take a look at the position of the planets in the solar system, using the Sun as the center around which all the planets are moving, orbiting, and going outward. I'll use the astrological symbols because we still use them in astronomy. Circle dot stands for the Sun. Okay? And then these symbols are based on a circle. So circle with little horn-like things and something down here. Cross is Mercury. And then we have one that looks like this, circle with a cross, Venus. And Earth, circle with the cross inside like that, is the Earth. Mars has an arrow off to the side with a circle, that's Mars. Jupiter has a part of a circle and a cross like that is Jupiter. Sort of looks like a funny sort of a J. Saturn looks like that. Uranus looks like this with an arrow straight up. Neptune looks like a trident. Neptune, the god of the sea, right? And Pluto has PL, like that. Doesn't stand for Pluto, it stands for Percival Lowell, because he's the guy that built the observatory and flagstaff that Clyde Tombaugh used to discover this planet, which wasn't the one he was looking for. Now, there's another interesting piece of information to this story. When Clyde Tombaugh was alive, nobody would ever say Pluto wasn't a planet. I mean, this has been around a long time that they were going to demote Pluto, but nobody would say it when he was around. This guy was a feisty little guy, and he wouldn't hear of it. So, in respect to him, nothing was done. He died, and then they start putting it the way they want it. But when he made his discovery, he wasn't an astronomer by academic training. He was an amateur astronomer. He was an observer, very good observer. And when Lowell built the observatory, he wrote to Lowell suggesting that maybe he should hire him to be an observer at the observatory. And he sent him his drawings and stuff that he made, and he got the job. So he was there for a long, long time. Really interesting character. I met him several years ago, 13 years ago. He was in Tucson. He would come here regularly, and he'd always be hyping his favorite charity, which was a scholarship that he set up at the University of New Mexico for students in astronomy. And if you wanted his signature on anything, his autograph, you had to pay him. And that's what he would do with the money he put in the scholarship fund. But he's quite a character. I mean, the guy was just quite a character. He actually saw a UFO and described the UFO he saw to people who were investigating UFOs. But he was a very good observer, very, very keen eye, and would take very detailed records. So when he was younger and asked for that job, he got it, and he did well. If you said to him, you didn't find the planet you were looking for, you would, what are you talking about? Here it is, I discovered this, it's Pluto. And then a kid named the planet Pluto. Okay, essentially, it's not the dog and Mickey Mouse, it's the god of the underworld. And of course, when they were getting ready to knock Pluto out of the running for a planet, sure enough, they discover Pluto has a moon, Charon. But so do all asteroids. Well, not all asteroids, but asteroids have moons, so it's not an unusual thing. But he said, see, I told you it was a planet, because typically you think of a moon being captured by a planet. So it had all the trappings, but it's much different than everything else, as we're going to see. All right, here's what you need to know. As you know your name, the order the planets are from the sun. Notice the Earth is third in line. Sometimes it's called the third rock from the sun. They had a comedy show by that very name. So when we look at this, we see the planets. Mercury is the closest one to the sun. It's the hottest planet in our solar system by virtue of its location. Venus, next one out. The size of Venus and the Earth are similar. The actual physical size, the radius of these two planets are the same. Sometimes people confuse this with other properties of the planets and say that Venus and Earth are sister planets. In other words, something happened on Venus that made Venus look like it does and didn't happen on Earth. And then they'll go another step further and say, well, what's going on Venus? And say, oh, runaway greenhouse effect. And then they'll say, aha, it's going to happen to the Earth. We're going to have runaway greenhouse effect if we don't watch out with all our pollution and stuff. And the fact is, Venus has got two things going for it on why it would have a very hot environment. And one, it's the next planet closest to the sun, so by proximity it's getting a lot of solar energy. And secondly, it has a huge amount of cloud cover, which has the ability to create the greenhouse effect. And it's got the right type of gas in its atmosphere, specifically carbon dioxide, which again people would then say, aha, you put the number of carbon dioxide atoms higher and you increase it in the atmosphere, look what's going to happen to the Earth. But then they forget about Mars, that has a basically carbon dioxide atmosphere, and it's pretty cold there. But then again, it's furthest from the sun than Venus or the Earth would be. Mars is much smaller than the Earth. Jupiter is a huge planet. It's about one-tenth the diameter of the sun. So if you could only see two objects from deep out in space looking back at our sun, you definitely would probably see Jupiter as well as the sun. And even if you couldn't see any of the other planets, you would see that the sun was being tugged by something that was pretty massive. And it was tugged in such a way that as the sun's star, the star that we call the sun, if you were far enough away, watched it move through space, as all objects do, it would actually move like this, would oscillate, and the oscillation would have a period, in other words, the time it takes to go from, say, low to high to low to high, of 11 and some odd years, which happens to be the orbital period of Jupiter. So Jupiter, you could actually detect Jupiter tugging on the Sun. And this is one technique we use when we look for other planets around other stars. That's one of the techniques. It's an astrometric technique. You're watching, making a measurement of the star's position as it moves through space. And if it tends to wobble like that, or any complication that you can get with a series of wobbles that are all superimposed, you get a very interesting pattern. You can extract the individual, these are called sine waves, you can extract these, and you can tell what's doing the tugging. Saturn, also a very large planet, much smaller than Jupiter. Yes? Question?
No.
Oh. Oh. Saturn. I was on a roll. I was on a roll and you destroyed it. Saturn. Very large planet, not quite as big as Jupiter. Uranus, also a large planet. Neptune, large planet. But Jupiter is big. And there's a separation when you go outward to the outer planets in size and composition. These tend to be very gaseous planets. They're called the gas giants for that reason. Their atmospheres, their makeup is primarily hydrogen gas and various components of hydrogen and methanes and such. These, from Mars inward, are rocky planets. These are the types of planets that we call them the terrestrials because they're similar to Earth. There's this solid place you can put your feet. Of all the planets, okay, what about Pluto? Well, it's not a gas giant. It's tiny, it's about the size of the moon, if you want a comparison. And it's very cold. It's very cold on Pluto. So whatever gases would have been in its atmosphere are on its surface frozen. Okay, this is just frozen gases. So they're ices. And it's out there, but tiny. And its orbit is not quite like these others, as we're going to see. The planets of the solar systems, all of the planets orbit around the Sun within a narrow band called the ecliptic plane, and you'll find them all within that. Pluto goes like this. If all of the other planets go like this, Pluto goes like this, at an angle to that, which indicates it's not part of the original makeup of the solar system. And then some people have said that Pluto, looking at its size and its orbit, and it's what it does in the vicinity of Neptune, that it might have been a moon of Neptune that was somehow gravitationally kicked out. Because Pluto and Neptune cross, their orbits cross, and certain times of a century, when you look at who's the furthest one out, sometimes it's Neptune, and Pluto will be inside Neptune's orbit, and now it's Pluto. Pluto's outside. I think 99 it switched, went out. So very interesting stuff, dynamics going on here, which is why, again, we don't think Pluto was one of the original setups that happened during this, whatever went on with the early solar system. So to remember this, when I was in junior high school, I remembered it by this way. Maybe you have something else. Mary, with an M. Mary's, velvet. Crazy sentence. V, Venus. Eyes, Earth. Makes, M. John, J. Stay, S. Up, U. Nights. And if you want to remember Pluto, period, the end of the sentence. But we don't have to worry about Pluto. So, Mary's velvet eyes makes John stay up nights. Okay? My very educated mother just served us 9 pizza pies. That's another one. 9 pizzas without the pie, no Pluto. And then one year when I was teaching this, I asked my students, make up your own. I can't tell you what they came up with. So, so I'm not going to tell you. You can do it on your own. I don't want to hear it. All right, some facts about the solar system. The Sun is approximately 10 times the diameter of Jupiter. So if you imagine the size of the Sun, one-tenth of it would be the size of Jupiter, right? Almost all the mass in our solar system is in the Sun. If you looked at the entire mass of everything in our solar system, the planets, the asteroids, everything, the comets, you'll find most of the mass in the Sun. However, the next biggest thing that'll contain a huge amount of mass is Jupiter. Right? So again, you'll see the effects of Jupiter on our solar system. Jupiter, then, is approximately 10 times the diameter of Earth. So if you imagine Jupiter's diameter, a tenth of that would be the diameter of the Earth. So you've all seen, I'm sure, in pictures and heard about the red spot on Jupiter. You could fit the Earth in that easily, and just to give you an idea of size. Okay. The Sun is a star composed of gas emitting lots of energy. By internal energy sources. In other words, what will distinguish the star from the planets in the solar system is that the star, the Sun, emits energy without relying upon any external activity. While a planet will reflect the energy from the Sun because of its composition, but doesn't internally generate energy. Now, having said that, I've got to qualify a little bit, because Jupiter emits a huge amount of energy on its own for some reasons we don't understand yet. And it could be that Jupiter is just a little bit too small to have been a star. So there might be some still gravitational activity going on that keeps its interior hot to cause this. We know that one of Jupiter's moons, Io, the inner moon, interacts with there's a radiation environment around Jupiter, and as this moon moves through it, it sets up essentially the radio transmissions that you can pick up from Jupiter. But the Earth also emits energy. The Earth has an interior which is very hot. We don't know why. Some suggest it's the leftover heat from when the planet was formed. And then if you say, okay, if that's the reason, then why isn't Venus internally still hot? And then you say, but we look at the data carefully, it is, because there seems to be volcanoes on Venus. So that's fine. Mars, what happened to Mars? Too small. It got rid of its heat a long time ago. Now, how do you tell if a planet is hot internally? You look at its surface. If you have volcanoes, if you have earthquakes, then that tells you that the surface is reflecting what's going on below. So Mercury is a tough planet to get to do anything with. We've flown past Mercury. And because it's so close to the sun, the way we fly these missions, we rely on gravity to take the spacecraft in toward the planet, and then the planet's gravity captures it and stays in orbit. So if you don't do it just right, and you're trying to hit Mercury, the sun's there, and the sun's going to take over, and you're going to miss Mercury and end up in the sun. So we don't go to Mercury an awful lot. We've been there at least once. And we looked at its surface, and it's very interesting to see the surface of Mercury. It looks like the moon. It's even more so. There are craters all over the place. And but there doesn't seem to be any active volcanism. And whatever atmosphere it has is tenuous at best because its proximity to the sun is very, very hot. So some interesting stuff goes on with Mercury. Jupiter, as I said, gives off energy. Saturn, there's some there. As you move out, you don't see it too much. But the Earth is very active internally. Why it's hot? Let's say it should have cooled off a long time ago. Didn't. What's the other reason? Natural radioactivity. The Earth has a huge amount of uranium in it. And uranium under normal conditions just decomposes, disintegrates into other materials, and in the process, some of its elements, some of its isotopes, generate heat. And so some people think this is what keeps the Earth continually going. One guy went so far as to say that the Earth has the equivalent of a nuclear reactor in its core, which keeps the heat coming. And as we'll see, eventually the half-life of uranium is 4.5 billion years. So this process can continue for a long time. And we don't know, ultimately. It's important that there be liquid core in the Earth based on how we understand certain things, because the Earth has a magnetic field. We have to explain that. And we're having trouble with that. But we do the best we can. So the sun, then, is composed of gas emitting huge amounts of energy from internal sources. And then we can say that planets are bodies which are capable of reflecting sunlight and orbit the sun. So this for a long time was a good description of a planet in our solar system. And some would even have narrowed this down and said we're talking about partially hardened bodies. In other words, they wouldn't be necessarily all atmospheres. There'd be some solid surface to them. And then you'd say, well, then what happens to gas giants? You say, no, the solid surface there would be way down under the gas cloud cover. And when you go in and read about the individual planets, you'll find that the interiors of the gas giants may actually have a rocky core about the size of the Earth or something similar to that. In other words, you couldn't fly all the way through these things without banging into something solid somewhere in the middle. You couldn't fly through it anyway. It'd just be too turbulent, and the gas pressure would be so great. It would be like it'd be like jumping into water from a height. You'd just go splat when you hit the surface because of the change in densities and then the surface tension. So it would be an interesting idea. Of course, everyone knows the time you would go to the sun if you wanted to visit the sun would be at night. And there's a couple of people who are awake. All right. So
get it.
You do. You get it. You get it. He gets it, right? Anyway, all right. So now we're going to break up the solar system again. In general, we're going to have two planetary groups. Okay, and the first group are the terrestrial planets. And the terrestrial planets will then represent a group of planets that resemble the Earth in size and rocky composition. So the terrestrial planets would be, of course, Earth, Mercury, Venus, and Mars. So those are our terrestrial planets, and notice they're the inner solar system planets. Then we have the second type of planets, and these are the gas giants. The gas giants, and these would be planets very much bigger than the Earth, and composed of icy or gaseous hydrogen. H2 is hydrogen. I don't know. G-A-S-E-O-U-S. So icy or gaseous hydrogen compounds. For example, CH4, which is methane, and NH3, which is ammonia, and H2O, which is water. So water is a compound of hydrogen. Now, we then, in our solar system, find the gas giants further away from the sun. And so the thinking went something like this. All the planets started out with a huge amount of hydrogen in their environments, because the hydrogen would have come from the sun, from where the planets were ultimately formed. And then the idea is, the planets that are in close to the sun, because they are closest to the source of heat, so to speak, there'd be a lot of thermal activity in the atmospheres. The hydrogen, being very light and easy to push around, would get blown off into space. So the only thing that would remain in the vicinity of the inner planets, the rocky planets, would be their rocky cores and some thin layer of gas, depending on the gravity of the planet, that would form an atmosphere. And if you just happen to be at the right distance, then your atmosphere would be stable, and it'll be around for a long time. It's able to change based on the surface conditions. So then the idea said, as you move away, the sun's energy output, because the sun actually, its radiation pressure can push against stuff like atmospheres, it doesn't have such a great effect on the gas giants. So then the gas giants would tend to be still maintaining their huge amounts of hydrogen atmospheres and look the way they look. And then, of course, Pluto doesn't fit, because Pluto is not a gas giant, and its way out there is just this lump. That's what the idea was. So we expected, when we found other planets around other stars, that it was going to be just like this. Now, where did that idea start from, or sound like? Well, we're the middle of everything, and it's going to be just like we said it is, because we're here in the middle. You heard that before, right? Aristotle, right? Goes back, yeah, we're in the center. So, for a long time, and not too far back in the distant, not too distant past, we still had this parochial attitude that all, when we discover other planets, the solar systems are going to look just like ours. We're going to have the rocky planets close to the star and the big gas giant type planets far away from the star. Boy, were we in for a surprise. We're starting to discover planets. Several years ago, the planets we're discovering, again, we did by tug first. We look at how the planets were affecting the objects, the star's motion. Well, we find the big planets. Then when we start doing the mathematical analysis of the way the wave looks, we find something rather disturbing. We find that these humongous giant planets that are tugging on their stars are actually where we would expect the rocky planets to be. They're in close. We have no idea how come. All right, just threw everybody for a loop. Because we were so convinced that our solar system is the model that everything's going to look like. I'm not apologizing for us. I'm just saying it's the way we are. When we start off and we still don't learn, right? From we see stuff in the past and we still think we're in the center. And we're not. Well, here's a good example. So now we have to change our models, trying to understand how planets come to be. And how can you have a gas giant type planet very close to its star? So maybe the idea that the star's energy output is going to affect the planet's atmosphere might have to be modified. Maybe it has to do with the type of star we're talking about. Is it a very hot star, very bright, sends a lot of energy off? Is it very cool? Maybe Earth-like stars won't have this problem. Unfortunately, we found planets around Earth-type suns. But we also found small ones. Right, and we're looking right now. There's a satellite, the Kepler satellite, is in space, going to perform something like 100,000 observations over the next 3 years, using a technique where a planet would cross in front of the star, form an eclipse. Except you won't see an eclipse the way you think of an eclipse, but the output of the star's light will diminish by a small percentage because an object is passing in front of it. So they're going to do, over the next 3 years, they picked a sample of stars, it's 100,000, and they're going to look at them three times. And statistically, there are going to be some of those stars, if they have solar systems, where the solar system is lined up with our line of sight. So a planet, if it went in front of its star, can be seen with this technique. And then, if it's an Earth-like planet, they know what the drop in intensity is going to be based on its size and how long it takes for this eclipse to occur. They know how fast it's going, so they know, using Kepler's laws, where its orbit is. And they're going to do the observation three times to make sure that they got the right object. And over the course of 3 years, they'll see it at least twice going around in front of the sun. And that's how they're going to do the survey. So out of 100,000 stars, I think they're estimating something like they might get hits on 1,000 and actually get good data on 100 or something like that. So in 3 years' time, and it started this year, so by what, 2012, we should have confirmation of Earth-sized objects, planets around other stars, that are solar-type stars. Some of which will be solar types. So that's going to be very interesting. We're not seeing them directly. All right. We have another satellite going up, I guess the Webb telescope is called, which will have the capability of actually imaging Earth-type star around, or an Earth-type planet around a star that's similar to the sun. They could black out the effect of the light from the star and look at the planet and actually look at it in a way that they could just look at its light and see what its atmosphere is like using spectroscopy. So very interesting and exciting times. And luckily these are projects, well, the Webb's not up yet, but that could be in trouble. But I don't know. But we got Kepler up there, so we're okay. At least we'll have something. We didn't go back to the moon. I'm sad about that. All right. What else? Pluto. Doesn't fit either case. It doesn't fit either condition. And it's continued considered a dwarf planet. And we actually gave that class of planets a new name called the Plutoids in honor of Pluto. So it's a Plutoid. And there's a whole bunch of these things in our solar system. So Pluto is more like these other objects than they are a planet. The gas giants in our solar system would be Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. And Pluto is a Plutoid. There are some asteroids that are bigger than Pluto. And so, and asteroids wouldn't be considered planets, but there's an asteroid belt that orbits the Sun between Mars and Jupiter. So you could say that whatever was there, if there was a planet or it didn't make it and it didn't clear its path, because there's all this junk in that orbit. So something was there, and what's left over is these plutoid type objects or asteroids, depending on how they're defined. Okay, so now here's some planet data. I'll make a little list here, little chart, and we'll start with the Sun and Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, and Pluto. I still stick Pluto in here because it's still a solar system object that people are familiar with. Oh, I forgot. Oh, Uranus. Uranus. That's right. Let's look at the... Until they... Yeah, they ended up on Saturday Night Live. Okay, let's see. We've got the diameter. I'm going to have the diameter here in this column in kilometers. And I'm going to have the radio time. I'll explain what that is in a minute. And then the distance from the Sun. So we'll start with the Sun. The Sun is 1,391,400 kilometers in diameter. Okay, it's pretty big. It's almost a million miles across.
The distance, is that going to be relative
to the Sun? Okay, so we're going to just have blanks right there. Mercury, 4,878 kilometers. The radio time, 3.13 minutes. What that means is how long it takes a radio signal, or you could put it another way, light from the Sun to reach the planet. So the sunlight from the Sun takes 3 minutes to get to Mercury. Okay? And the distance that it is from the Sun would be 35 million miles. We're going to have 10 to the 6th mile, so it's million miles, so 35 million miles. Venus, 12,104 kilometers, 6 minutes light travel time, 67 million miles. The Earth, a little bit bigger than Venus, 12,756. It takes 8.3 minutes for the light to get from the Sun to the Earth. You go outside, sunlight is reaching you, it left the Sun 8.3 minutes ago. 93 million miles. Mars is about half the size of the Earth, 6,787. Takes 12.6 minutes and is 141 million miles on average, the distance from the Sun. Jupiter, 142,800 kilometers. Okay, 43 and a half minutes. It's 484 million miles away from the Sun. Saturn, 120,660. 79 and a half minutes radio time. 887 million miles. Uranus, 50,800. You don't have to memorize this chart, okay? This is just for your edification. 2.7 hours. 1.784 billion, 10 to the 9 miles. Neptune, 48, almost as big as Uranus, 4.2 hours for radio time, 2.797 billion miles away, and then Pluto, we think it's about 3,100 kilometers, not quite too sure on that. 5.5, we're actually heading out toward Pluto with a space craft. I think it was launched, I think it made it. And so we're actually going to get there at some point. 5.5 hours. And it is 3.6 billion miles away. Now, again, we look at this, try to get some sense of size of our solar system. And again, the model that I have out here on the Paseo is a scale model of the solar system to distance and size. Except the only thing you see that has any physical diameter is the Sun and Jupiter. Saturn's in there a little bit, and Uranus, you can see little tiny circles. The Earth is a pinprick on that scale. But it'll give you a sense. If you have someone stand on the Sun and somebody stand on one of the other planets, you get a feel for the distance and look down and see what the physical size of the planet would look like, and you'll see that our solar system is basically empty space. Okay. The other thing that's interesting about that is you won't find Pluto on that walkway. Two reasons. One, it's not a planet. And two, he had no place to put it, because it would have had to been in the street. Well, actually, where the buses turn around, and was off college property. So I would have gotten in trouble if I put it there, and it wouldn't have lasted long anyway. So it's good it's not a planet, so we don't have that problem. No, not quite the golf course. Actually, where the buses pick you up, right at the end of the Paseo, right on that other little island. So this is the other thing. Look at this. Now, this would be the direct line from the Sun to the planet. If you're standing on the Earth and you're communicating, say, to Mars, sometimes, depending upon where Mars is in its orbit, this travel time, this radio distance, can actually go up to 20-odd minutes. And what does that mean? You got a probe on Mars, right? It's zooming along, it's got little TV eyes, it's sending pictures back to Earth. You're getting pictures that could be as old as 20 minutes. So here's this thing going along, and there's somebody with a joystick, you know, in a control room telling it go left, go right. But when you say go left, go right, it takes 20 minutes for that signal to get there. So this thing is looking at a hole, right? And you see the hole, and you say, uh-oh, that thing's heading for a hole. I better turn to go around the hole. Well, by the time you get this signal back and forth, almost an hour goes by, it's in the hole. So they had to design these vehicles with a little bit of intelligence. And so they scan the area, and they say, I'm not sure what I'm seeing. I'm going to stop until I get the command. And that's what they'll do. They'll stop. And plus, they go very slowly. They're not running a marathon up there. It takes them a long time to go the length of this room. So they sort of build in some of this. But the fact is, this is it. Imagine playing a video game. When you turn the joystick, it takes 20 minutes for the little thing on the screen to respond. That's what it would be like controlling one of these devices. The other thing that's even more remarkable, and again, how smart we can be, we sent out in the 70s, it was called the Grand Mission, and it actually flew by Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and we actually got images with a camera on the Voyager spacecraft. Now imagine this, there's a big boom on which the camera is located. This thing is zooming along almost at 66,000 miles an hour. All right. It takes, when you're in the vicinity of Mars or Jupiter, 43 minutes, if you had a direct line of sight, to get the signal back from that spacecraft. The camera's looking at Jupiter. You're seeing what it saw, 43. It's already passed whatever it is you want to take the picture of. Not only that, but when you're out this far, almost half a billion miles, the sunlight is well reduced. So you have to take a time exposure. So you can't do it in real time. They had to program the computers to take a time exposure and turn the camera as it's zooming past the moons of the planet that they're looking at or the planet, so that it keeps the object in perfect focus and doesn't add any movement that would make a blur. So this was all simulated before the thing even left. You're going back, technology that's 40 years old. All right. Today, it's a snap to do this stuff, but it's still difficult, but it's a lot easier. Then you had big mainframe computers. You had to program everything with cards, punched cards. If you made a mistake, you had to go back and fix it. It was just a remarkable set of technologies. And we got the best pictures then of these outer planets. Today we get really good pictures with the Hubble Space Telescope. You don't have to go anywhere, just up in orbit. But that shows you the advance of the technology. And then when we start looking for other planets, we've got those capabilities now to actually start getting to the point we can image things. We're not going to see anybody waving yet, you know, like, hey, how you doing, Earth? But maybe someday we'll get pretty close to that. All right, so there's our solar system. Really big. What happens beyond Pluto's orbit? Or if we use Neptune. All right, what we have is we still have, through all of this, the influence of the sun, yes.
On Voyager, they had something that tells if there's species out there where we are located.
Yeah, there's a record that's on there, and the record is like the first DVD, right? Or equivalent. A CD-ROM or something, but we included the stylus to play it, and on the cover, it's a gold cover, it has graphics. So the idea is anybody who found this might be able to figure out where this thing came from, and it's got a picture of a man on the cover and a woman.
But not anatomically correct, so they'll never know how we reproduce.
When they were doing this, there's a whole bunch of songs, there were pictures on the album. They wanted to send a picture of a naked man and a naked pregnant woman, okay? So that you could see what we look like. When Congress got hold of it at the time, said you can't send pornography into space. So that what they sent was in shadow. You have a shadow of the man and the woman, and so you get an idea. But now, what they should have been worrying about is not sending pornography in space, but sending all this information about us into space. Because suppose there is somebody out there that picks this up and says, "Yeah, oh boy, we got good pickings now." All right, can you imagine? We've just sent out, thinking everybody is like ET. We just sent out, and it's going out there toward the constellation in Hercules, like a greeting card, like here we are, and here's where we live, and it's got a graphic that shows where we sent. It's got the planets, and it's got the Earth, and this thing, and they have a drawing, a graphic of what the Voyager looks like. So, okay, that's this thing that we sent out, and then we use pulsars, which other advanced civilizations should be able to pick up, and you can triangulate back to which star you're looking at. And, I mean, we just sent them, here's where we are, here's what we look like, we love music, here's all the music we like, and, you know, and let's be friends. And the guy's picture is like this, he's standing there with his hand up like that. Now, who knows? Again, this is the way we think, right? Suppose you go to another civilization, put your hand up like that, and it means I'm going to come and get you and slap you around until you're silly. We don't know, right? Even on Earth, you go to a Vietnamese kid and pat him on the head, and that's an insult. Right? So how do you know? And again, it's just the way we are. We think everybody's going to think the way we do. So I don't know if that was a good idea, that was sent out there. But we'll know at some point, I think. Hopefully somebody nice will find it. They did one of the Star Trek movies.
Oh yeah, the first one.
Was it the first one? They found Vija. Vija. It was Voyager landed on this thing and it wore out the letters, and the only letters that were left was Vija. And so it's very interesting, but I guess they were nice that found it. I don't know. We want everybody to be nice. It's a tough one. All right, let me end with this. Travel time. We're going to go and take a trip to the sun. Again, just to give you an idea how far away the sun is in things that we're familiar with moving. So we're going to travel time to sun, and we're going to do this in four different ways. We're going to do a 3-mile-per-hour walk. We're going to walk to the sun, and that's an average speed that we walk. And then we're going to take an automobile going 60 miles per hour to the sun. And then we're going to take a 600 mile an hour airplane, jet. And then we're going to take the Voyager, which is the fastest thing we've ever sent out, at 66,000 miles per hour. All right? And we're going to travel time to the sun. So now we're going to walk to the sun. Any idea how long it's going to take us to walk to the sun?
A long time.
How, give me a year, a time. What do you think?
4 trillion years.
No, not 4 trillion years. 3,588 years.
You gotta stop and use the potty.
Yeah, are we there yet? 3,588 years to walk to the sun. Alright? So, that gives you an idea. You know how long it takes you to walk around the earth? If you wanted to, probably about 3 or 4 years. If you could walk around the earth. You have a problem with the oceans. I guess you have to go up to the North Pole, then you'd have to take a longer route, and then hope the land bridge is frozen a little bit and you can get across it. But 3,000 years. Alright, you're going to drive a car. Are we there yet? 167 years. Take a plane, it's about 17.9 years. Okay, this is 24 hours a day. You're not stopping now, right? You're just zooming. And if you take the Voyager, 58 days. Even with the fastest thing that we've built and launched, it would still take 58 days to get to the sun. Yes, question? 58 days with the fastest thing we've launched. So we're nowhere near Star Trek.
Can you go faster than that, 66,000?
Yeah, you can go faster than that. Thing is, you got to turn around and stop because we still don't have... the way we do this is we coast. We give a big push or use the gravity from the other planets to increase our speed, and we coast. We don't have engines that are big enough.
Well, you can ask your question. I was wondering if they use nuclear energy or anything like that.
Well, if we took... what the space shuttle uses to go up into space, if we had that gas tank in orbit and hooked it up to the space shuttle, then we can go places. But we use like millions of pounds of fuel in 8 minutes just to pick the thing up to 100, 200 miles. And then there's no more fuel. There's a little bit there for the retro rockets and for reaction jets, but that's it. But if we had that fuel tank, those two boosters and that liquid fuel tank up there, whoa, we could go places. Because then you've got a huge amount of energy available to push that thing fat, and you can still coast and still save that energy to get back or pick the right orbit if you just wanted to make a circumnavigation of something. So, 58 days. The sun, from our perspective, is far away. And only 8 minutes for light to get here. Only 8 minutes? That's turning on your flashlight and waiting 8 minutes for the beam to get to the earth. So it's still far away, and light goes really fast. So now we're dealing with distances that are big, and a little bit beyond what we have. And also, the idea that talking about right now, we see is very local. Because compared to the sun right now, what am I really saying? What the sun was doing 8.5 minutes ago. So if something happened to the sun right now, I wouldn't know for 8.5 minutes. You see? So the idea of this simultaneous events, we start to lose a little bit. Even when you're on your cell phones or watching TV, you've got the signal that goes up to the satellite and back down. 24,000 miles up, approximately 24,000 miles, 48,000 miles. Takes second, fraction of a second, there's a delay. And they have to build that into the systems so that you don't notice it, or else when you talk, you'll be hearing echoes, or you'll be seeing the football being caught before it's being caught, depending upon where in the country you are picking up the signal. And you can demonstrate this with games that are simulcast on radio and TV, because they go different paths. It's a little bit behind or ahead, depending on where you're looking. So this idea of right now starts to break down when we even talk about our solar system. And then you already know this, the AU is defined as, hopefully you've seen it somewhere, the astronomical unit. as the A and the U, and that's the Earth-Sun distance. Of about 93 million miles. And as we're going to see, that's the fixed value. It's like our yardstick. But when we look at the distance that the Earth is from the Sun, it's a little bit more than that, a little bit less than that, depending upon where it is, because the Earth is in orbit around the Sun in an ellipse. Okay, any other comments, questions? That's it. Anyone have to sign up for observations? I'll meet you at the observatory. Lights, please.
So, you know what the comment is?